drop goal!
It's over! They've done it! Evans has done it!
Welcome back to another episode of Two Woods and Four Quarters, a Harlequin podcast. What a Sunday night. We're sat here in the aftermath of watching Quinn's Racing at La Défense. Unfortunately, we didn't make the trip, but it almost felt like we did watching that on TV. I'm sat here, as always, with my cousin Will. Apologies for the croakiness. How you feeling, mate? How you feeling?
I'm on cloud nine, mate. I wish I was as croaky as you. I don't think it's from shouting. I think it's from the beers, isn't it? But still,
yeah, maybe,
unbelievable yeah. Game we've just witnessed. Quinn's doing a job on Racing 92, doing a proper job. And as we say, we were there last year and it was one of the greatest away days we've ever been a part of. That's fell true. Just short last year, the flip of a coin. This year, the shoe's on the other foot. Colossus from
unbelievable.
The point.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Colossus. We're going to spend the next 45 minutes or so worshipping every single one of those lads for different reasons. Will Joseph is just different gravy. Will Evans, the best number seven on the planet. The list goes on. Marcus Smith is magic. I don't think he's even human. It was so good, wasn't it? It was so Dylan Lewis.
I know.
How good was Dylan Lewis? 80 minutes from Dylan Lewis. He looked tired after about 20.
We might have to spend or like put a cap on ours as in like a 5 minute per player because we will be here for hours, won't we? But no, before we start, you know, going completely bananas about who was playing and who was just insane, because obviously they all were. How's your weekend? Obviously we're doing this Sunday night. What's
late one.
How did the Ams go on Saturday?
Late one for us this week, isn't it? I don't like the Sunday night ones. I feel like we're late to the party. Everyone else has played and recorded. We feel like we're late, but it was worth the wait, wasn't it?
It means that the whole rest of the weekend's been spent building up to what is ultimately going to be the best match of the weekend, because it's us against the best team in France.
Okay, then. Before I answer the question about how the Ams went, comparing this weekend, the very last game of the round on a Sunday night, versus last weekend, which was the very first game on the Friday night, what do you prefer?
I don't care as long as we win.
Well, we won. Like,
we've had two pretty special performances on a Friday and a Sunday night.
Wow,
an unbelievable couple of weeks. Like, unbelievable.
Wow. It's only going to get bigger as well with Toulouse next. But yeah, the Ams.
Come on, the Ams. Yeah, how the Ams go?
The Ams this week. I did see you got
the armband. I thought, what's gone on there in the management department to give you the armband? Someone's been having too much in the week.
Oh, come off it, mate. I lead by example. I was captain this week. Last time I captained was in the Cup semi-final when we won away to a team from St. Albans, which is obviously Saracens territory. So I was one from one, good record. Unfortunately, we did just lose to Staines 21-18. But we're probably going to flatter ourselves here. It was very similar to the Quinn's Racing game that we just watched.
Yeah, you cannot have yourself like that.
No, it was a brilliant game. It was a brilliant game. I thought Racing played really, really well, and we were the equivalent of Racing, I think.
But not as good as Staines, though.
But not as good as Staines, unfortunately, yeah, as was the case. Two good teams going at it. Every single player on our side was awesome as well. We attacked well, we defended well. They had to earn their tries. One loose intercept pass ultimately won them the game. Similar to last week with a charge down kick that cost us the game. So we're not a million miles away, but I'm in the most pain I've ever been in after a game of rugby, because I knew I was playing fly half in the build-up to this, and I'm starting to channel my inner MS-10. So I went to the gym beforehand, sat on the bike for a bit, warmed up the legs because I knew I was going to be kicking and I don't normally kick. And I know I'm made of biscuits these days, so damage limitation, get your body prepped. So I'm on the bike, warming up. I go and stretch off. I'm feeling good. I'm thinking, okay, this could go well. Get there. It's a nice, big, wide pitch. It's wet, but it's a blue sky, sunny day, lovely conditions for some rugby. I'm thinking, yeah, this is good. This has got all the right recipe for an MS-10 style performance.
Right.
And I'm kicking in the warm-up. A few looseners, let's be fair. There's a few looseners. I start striking it pretty well after that. So much so that I was getting pretty confident, and a bobbling ball came up to me. I thought, oh, well, I'll have a quick go at a drop goal just in case. And managed to strike it just a little bit too early and sort of extended my quad a little bit too far and got a nice little pull up the top of my right quad, which is in absolute agony today. And we had no back subs on the bench. So I had to play 80 minutes with one leg. Although within the first 5 minutes of the game, I see sort of the sea part in front of me and there's a massive gap and I have to take it. And I take it and I'm looking around left and right thinking, I'm not making this. I need some help. But still no one's coming and I've still got space in front of me. So I go on. I then throw the pass. I get this late shot from one of their big Fijian centers, shoulder direct to my left thigh, and get probably the worst dead leg I've ever had in my entire life. So I'm sat here doing this podcast right now with two dead thighs, both iced up, can't walk, and I've broken two fingers on my left hand. So tell me why we do this. And I could have been in Paris this weekend watching one of the games you'll ever see. So
I know the FOMO from this weekend, having just watched the game, was a bit unbearable.
I've enjoyed watching a game from home, actually, because I've done a couple of away games recently, and then we've been at the Stoop quite a lot. It was nice just to stick it on and sit back and relax, because even if it was at the Stoop, or even if I was going on the away day, I wouldn't have been able to walk anyway. So
it was nice to sit and watch in the comfort of my own home, but I'd have much rather watched it from the warmth of the La Défense Arena, but never mind.
Yeah. Bad day to be a red wine on that side of the channel.
Oh my God. We'll talk about the game, but I was watching it, and as soon as that full-time whistle went, I thought, if I was there now, I'd have been sending the email to work saying, look, I'm not making it. I'm going to
miss the last Eurostar, which is probably quite realistic.
Yeah, I've missed the last Eurostar. I've had to spend another 100 euros on the night in a crummy hotel somewhere in Paris, and I'm going to spend all night in the stadium nightclub until they physically have to kick me out.
Requesting highlights from Will Evans 80 minutes on big screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Dylan Lewis.
Can someone play Reef one more time, please? I'm not quite ready to see the night drop off just yet.
Alexa, play the Mighty Quinn.
Oh man, I wish I was. Honestly, if I was in Paris right now, even if we would have had to get the train home, I'd have been drinking Teddy's the whole way back until my feet touched down in Teddington.
Do you remember last time, obviously, we got lucky and managed to jump on a bus, but we were on the same Eurostar back as the boys.
Yeah.
Absolutely knackered and probably a little bit deflated because we just missed out. Imagine the Eurostar back now. The Quins fans are on that with all the boys.
Absolute party carriage.
Get those tinnies in. Bring up, lads, you deserve it.
And there'll be a few lads there that are using ice cold tinnies to ice the shoulders, and be a few of them, you know, just pouring down the back of the neck as well. But
yeah.
Special. Anyway, come on then. Let's talk about the game. Let's start with some selection. We were pretty similar to Sale at home, weren't we?
Yeah, and I guess it was warranted, wasn't it?
100%.
That performance was just flawless, wasn't it? Didn't concede a single try. That defensive set, for me, is still the highlight. But then we put them to the sword, scoring six tries, I think it was, off the top of my head. So it was a comfortable win. And look, we talked last week on this podcast about how we were going to tackle Europe, and we weren't quite sure. And then came to the forefront quite quickly over this weekend. Actually, all the English sides are bang up for it, aren't they? And all the English sides have got a real point to prove. We're often forgotten about. The URC deliver plenty of winners. They've now got the South African teams in there. The top 14 is the dominant league. It's the Premier League of rugby. The Premiership, two teams going bust last year. Arguably, the forgotten league of the European leagues.
Yeah.
The English sides went really well in Europe this weekend. Of the eight sides that played, seven of those won, and there was one side that lost, which was Saracens. So that's something just to be
I did actually watch a bit of their game as well. It was quite good to watch, wasn't it? Oh, brilliant.
Unbelievable showing from the English sides. And
yeah, it was good.
Probably, maybe I'm biased, we probably had the hardest gig of anybody.
100%.
Of the weekend. Away at Racing, who are top of the top 14, superstar signings and Sia Khaleesi, who loves singing before he runs out, and Henry Arundel, who is England's superstar.
Well, he's God's gift to the earth, isn't he, Henry Arundel?
He was. He's not anymore. So yeah, I think we had the toughest game, and I mean, it was tit for tat, unbelievable to watch, and I am surprised that we've come away with 5 points. We didn't know how we were going to tackle Europe. We went full whack, similar squad to last week. It was warranted. And it's paid off. It really has paid off. And now all of a sudden, we're looking at Toulouse at home next week, who are going to have one more day, aren't they, to prepare for it than we are.
But they're also going to have the travel day included. I'd assume that the boys will be on the Eurostar back home this evening.
That's true. They'll have the travel day. And also, French teams don't tend to travel so well in Europe. I know Toulouse are a bit of an anomaly because they are Toulouse with Antoine Dupont and the rest of their superstar players. But we're licking our lips, aren't we? We've just done Sale. We've just done a job on Racing away. We're back at the Stoop and nobody beats us at the Stoop.
I mean, nobody beats us at the Stoop, especially after Friday night. I mean, poor old Sale. If you watched their game, they played against Stade earlier on and then watched that first half against Racing. It's a completely different sport. I know that it's, you know, conditions suit and it's indoor and it suits our style of game and, you know, the ball's dry and all that sort of stuff, but it is a completely different sport. But a couple of things to note in terms of sort of starting players. Dylan Lewis starting, obviously Will Collier came out in the warm-up last week. So Lewis at 3, Simon Kerrid returning, Super Simon Kerrid back at 18, although we didn't actually see him, which we'll talk about a bit later. Sam Riley getting the nod at hooker, Walker returns to the bench. And then everything else at the minute is kind of picking itself, isn't it? We haven't really got too much in terms of chopping and changing. And like you said, we weren't quite sure how we were going to tackle Europe and whether there'd be a little bit of rest and rotation or whether they'd just, you know, go full bore, full raw, give it the best crack we can and see what happens. And my God, it's certainly paid off. But let's talk about Racing very, very quickly, because obviously we can't just talk about us. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of them there. There are some, you know, big matchups like Gael Fiku, Juan Imhoff on the ring, and Kanye came out and then ended up playing off the bench. I don't know quite what happened there. You know, Cameron Wokey, ex-Quinn Francis Ailey. So it's a side that we know and the side that we have played, obviously, in the last 12 months in the same setup. And we just had to go one better this time. And my God, did we. But let's talk about the game. That first half was absolutely breathless, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, let's even sort of condense it a bit further. The opening 5 minutes were breathless, absolutely breathless. And I felt uncomfortable just watching it because it was stressful. It was that fast. Yeah. It was so, so good to watch. It was exciting. It felt like either team were going to score at any moment. It didn't matter where you were on the pitch. There was a try coming. But it felt like we managed that opening phase pretty well. The opening 10, 15 minutes was all us.
I mean, you say I managed the opening phase pretty well. We had a penalty in the first couple of minutes that I assume we might have taken three and got ourselves on the board and got ourselves moving. Danny Kerr had other ideas and just went for the quick tap.
I love
that. And but we kept doing it, didn't we? For the first sort of 4 or 5 minutes, we had three, maybe two and a half, you could say, kickable penalties. And all three of them, we thought, no, that's not what we're doing tonight. We're going to go for the sticks.
Because if we're going to turn up with a full whack side in Europe away on the road and give it a good go, then let's give it a good go. Let's take a quick tap. Let's kick to the corner. Let's see what we can do. Let's put it on them early. However, there were three penalties that did culminate in 0 points. And then you're thinking retrospectively,
maybe could have the second one or two of them.
Yeah, they're a good side here. Maybe we should have taken one or two of them, get some points on the board. Every commentator talks about red zone efficiency when you're in the 22 and you've got the ball, how many times you convert. And we were 0 from 3 at that point. But it was all us. And I wasn't worried because Harlequins can score anywhere on the field at any time. And we had control of the game at that point.
At that point, you're absolutely right. We had control of the game, which is why their first try was a bit of a dagger, because you think, oh God, we've probably given up certainly 9 points. Maybe, you know, should have scored from one of those two penalties at least. But, you know, Le Garrick goes over and you just think a bit of a break, and Khaleesi's charging through the middle of the park, and you just think that's a bit disappointing. And it's the sort of thing where you think, you know, do we have the, I don't want to say the metal or the bottle or the nerves, but do we have the belief in do we have the belief in the intensity just to go, no, it's fine, because we believe that we will put points on them, because we were certainly looking like it. It just actually maybe takes the first try for us then to really start going. And it came through Marcus Smith's big dummy off the left hand, which I think 7 or 8 of those Racing defenders are still drifting off to the right hand touchline as he just sauntered in under the posts.
Yeah. Marcus was brilliant all game, wasn't he? And that was
unbelievable. Like, at times, completely unplayable.
Every time, completely unplayable. The amount of breaks he made, the fizzes he was putting through, the kicks. I think there was one bad kick, but apart from that, he was absolutely flawless. And most impressively, his defence.
Yeah, defence is great.
So often, we've never bought into this philosophy that Marcus Smith can't defend. Yes, he can defend. a negative tackle is still a tackle, even though some will see it other ways. But he made some positive hits today. One was a try saver, one better into touch, which is nice on another Englishman of a similar age trying to break through into the team. It's just nice, isn't it? Yeah. Reminds me of that kind of Jacob Umaga storyline when it was going to be Watts and who was going to be the next 10. And
we need to reference
that shit personally.
Need to reference that very quickly because that's obviously when you know you were playing at 10 on the weekend, you've been sending me photos of you in the WhatsApp group all week, just watching Marcus Smith highlights and watching clips. And you brought up that game against Wolves a couple of years ago where it was the future battle of the England number 10s and Umaga against Smith. And that conversation's, you know, washed away with the rest of the blood that has happened over the last
totally
2 or 3 years.
Totally disrespectful to Marcus Smith, that conversation. Outrageous. Yeah. I spent my week preparing for playing fly half by watching Marcus Smith highlight videos. Turns out the kid's got a lot of highlights already. And can add a few more this weekend.
I'll tell you, he also had some highlights to add to their reel this weekend was Andreas de Haezen. He's not been the dominant Andreas de Haezen, the agent of chaos, the barreling force of nature that we were so used to seeing or have been so used to seeing for the last couple of years. But tonight he was almost back to his best. And that first try of his, or our second try, was carbon copy of what he's been so good at for the last 3 or 4 years. Just Gael Fiku turning into an absolute turnstile.
I think these lads have missed playing with each other, you know. I think Marcus Smith felt out of place with the England setup. I think he even said in an interview, actually, it's quite hard to go from playing fullback and training at fullback to coming back in at 10 and controlling a team. It's a really big psychological shift. And Andre's the same. I think he only started once, maybe twice at 12. And if he did, he didn't get many minutes. So for him to come back in now and kind of get used to playing with Marcus again, Marcus is enjoying playing at fly half again. It couldn't be clearer that he is ticking now. Yeah. He is absolutely cooking, isn't he? And I think he's bringing Andre with him. Mm-hmm. And Andre, I think, has missed playing with Marcus Smith because he just finds little spaces for him. And any half shoulder he can get on somebody, he's through. Doesn't matter who they are, how big they are, how experienced they are. He ran through Gael Fiku quite comfortably, straight under the sticks.
Just knife through.
We're 14-7 up, and we're worth that. We're probably worth a little bit more than that, but we're 14-7 up at that point. But for me, I don't know how you felt throughout the game. I never felt comfortable. I always felt, for all of our pressure, for all of our territory, for all of our possession, there was always going to be a quick bang, bang, and they would be back in it. And it's all it took from them, really, in that first half. If we fast forward a little bit to half-time after we talk about that Marcus Smith drop goal, which I still can't believe he managed to find that from 45 metres. Ridiculous. But fast forward to half-time, I think we were far better than the three-point lead. And for all the territory and possession we had, all it took was two quick bang-bangs from Rassing, and they were right in it again. So I never really felt comfortable, even to the final whistle, of course, because it was that close. I just felt like they, even at the end, I thought maybe they were going to score. Quinns of older years would have probably conceded there. But off the back of Sale last week in defence, it was inevitable that we were going to put everything we possibly had into that set, and we did. So rewinding a bit now, first half, mate.
Yeah, I mean,
14, what are you reading there at halftime?
You're asking me how I feel about it. And do you know what? I don't want this to sound not maybe how it's meant to sound, but at halftime, I'd almost wash my hands of the result. Because I think we'll be there or thereabouts. But either way, it's going to be so much fun to watch. So I was sort of there going, do you know what? This is so much fun. If the fun maintains and the joy of just watching this game continues for the next 40 minutes, the result to me is almost second in that conversation. Obviously, it's not. But do you know what I mean? Like, you just think this is so much fun to watch. The result maybe just takes care of itself and what will be. And I think you're right, you know, the drop goal is, I mean, it's a beautifully executed piece of skill. It's 45 metres out. Obviously, it's a drop goal. And, you know, drop goals are becoming cool again in rugby somehow over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks through the World Cup.
I think they're so cool, mate. I think class.
And especially from the dropout where there's such a, you know, if defences are going to go long and try and, you know, get some distance between the ball and the try line that they're defending, the drop goal's always on. And maybe it helps that, in the depths of winter, it's on a dry stadium where you can trust the bounce. You can trust the bounce of the ball, and there's no wind to, you know, factor into the where it's gonna. How am I gonna hit it and all that sort of stuff? You're playing in a neutral environment with a perfectly flat surface, so it's probably as on as anything. And struck it unbelievably sweetly, and then, you know, unfortunately, we just end up conceding right before half time, which maybe takes the wind out of your sails just a fraction. but we're 17-14 up at half-time, and there are some tired bodies out there already. So although we did concede, yes, disappointing, but we're still in, you know, going up and into half-time with a lead. We've played some wonderful rugby. We're matching them physically. And I just remember, you know, texting you and just saying, if we can just keep matching the intensity that we've put through the first 40 minutes into the second 40 minutes, then we'll be there or thereabouts at the end. And we just needed a couple of moments of magic just to sort of carry us through the hard bits.
I think that's almost the recipe for winning away in Europe, isn't it? Just stay in the fight.
100%, yeah. Stay in the fight. And against the best team in France. You know.
Yeah, and the way we play as well, I think there was no better French opponent actually to be playing on the road when you think about it, because you've got that nice indoor stadium, which all of the boys seem to absolutely love.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
And I wonder if that was a factor in how we tackled Europe, because we would have quite happily taken 2 points away from that fixture, I think. As you say, at half-time, I was immensely proud of the way that we conducted ourselves in that first half. It's so much fun to watch as a fan. It's addictive in a way. Yeah. Like, I was so envious of everybody there. I hope you had an amazing time if you're listening to this on the way back, or if you're back already and nursing a hangover. I'm glad you're choosing to do it with us, because my word, you must have had an amazing night. And I am envious, because the stadium's amazing, but it was the perfect Harlequin stadium. And a few people have mentioned, if we had all the money in the world, how cool would that be to have something like that in Southwest London? Just like a little
It'd be nice to put one of these in Twickenham, if we could make that happen. That would be great. The surface was incredible. And the players that we've got, it suits us, I think. It suits us, this ground. So
it's nightclub in the UK. That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Just
there'd be no rumours of Marcus Thuram then.
But it's such a different environment to play in. You know, going from last week where, you know, we almost salted the ground of Carthage, you know, at the Stoop, just chucking all that sand on it to make it playable, then going to play someone like that where, you know, it's a dry track, the ball's not, I mean, weirdly, there was quite a few sort of like handling turnovers, but they were coming from rips in the tackle. And
because it was absolute chaos. Everyone was trying to offload. It was like sevens, yeah, but with 30 players on the pitch. That's why everyone's trying to throw a basketball over the top or slip one out the back, Sonny Bill Williams style. And it just led to absolute bedlam. It was so stressful, but so addictive.
Utter
I wouldn't have it any other way. And as you say, mate, I'd watched Sale v Stade Francais in the build-up and thought, following this every week. They didn't even go out their stadium, of course. They never do, but
even when you watch the
Stade, you'd think they would, but
I even watched most of the La Rochelle-Leinster game. Two amazing sides, but the weather certainly played its part there. It was absolutely tipping down in La Rochelle.
That was a great game, actually.
It was amazing sort of physicality, two properly international-level sides, but, you know, just the conditions that you can play in that stadium in Racing just lend themselves to the kind of rugby that we want to play. Anyway, exactly. Let's move on to the second half, because we didn't make loads of changes, but we didn't make loads of changes. Caden Murley did go off for HIA just before half-time and didn't return, which is a little bit of a concern.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means in terms of a layoff for him, whether there's going to be some sort of concussion protocol in play. But I did see him on the pitch after the game, you know, in his tracksuit, clapping the fans. So hopefully he's not too bad.
It's come out whilst we've been recording this, but there is a brilliant video of Will Evans and Alex Dombrandt singing along with the fans, conducting them. And Caden Murley's in the background and he's got a big smile on his face. So I think he might be okay.
Yeah, maybe. And I hope, if he enjoys a couple of beers on the way home, then, you know, Godspeed to him. But yeah, he was the only change that sort of happened at half time. And then, you know, the second half, they score quite early, and it looked like it might
have been
a bit of a knock-on. What do you reckon?
It was in the first 90 seconds, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which was disappointing. You never like that straight after half-time, because there's always the classic claims that you've not come out of the changing rooms yet.
Sorry to interrupt, because you did just say, I like the fact that Racing have gone up first and we've probably just made them wait for a couple of minutes just to come out. And that actually takes you thinking, mate, I think they're just still catching their breath. Like, just take any extra minute you can. I think it might just be a few tired legs.
You make them wait for that second half to start, didn't we? And it came back to bite us. But yeah, last week against Sale, we were the team scoring within the first 90 seconds. And at that point, it settles all the nerves. You establish yourselves as the dominant team. And when a game is as close as that this week, it's so important. And it was a real psychological blow. On replay, I think he did knock it on.
So the ruling to me and the wording of it is the thing that is important. So was it the referee said something around downward pressure, which
I think,
you know,
the finger wasn't able to. If there was separation between the hand, then it's a knock on. He's dropped it. and apparently there wasn't separation. However, I thought...
But you cannot tell me that he has full control of that ball as he's placing it over the line.
No. However, I'm not gonna dwell on this for too long because he could have scored that 10 times out of 10 if he wanted.
Yeah, and probably, yeah.
That half chance that he nearly kind of lets go of, it's like...
Yeah.
If he had not that one, we would have been extremely lucky.
Oh, I mean, he could have walked it in, but decided to go for a little dive.
He could have dived over,
It would have been a real stroke of luck had he dropped it, and it probably would have been a bit unjust because he probably would have, like you say, would have scored it 9 times out of 10 anyway.
Yeah, probably more. But still, it was a disappointing blow right at the start of the second half when we kind of controlled that first half and established ourselves in the game. It would have been nice to come out and get the first points or at least put up a bit of a fight. But that 20-minute period, that third quarter of the game, we were off a little bit.
A little bit.
We weren't off the pace. I think Racing probably just turned it up a notch and we were probably a little bit tired. I'm sure they were tired too. But when you're at home, you're playing on your pitch, you're flinging the ball around and you've got the class that they've got, they did kind of take control of the game a little bit in that third quarter.
I think you're right. In that third quarter, we probably just needed to regain just a little bit of control.
Yeah, I agree.
We didn't play in great, you know, field position, and you know, we just set piece occasionally wobbled at times. We won a couple of scrum penalties, we lost a couple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Line out was sometimes really good, sometimes not so good. But just in that third quarter of the game, that 40 to 60 minute spell, we didn't drop off enough actually that it put us out of the game. And like you say, we just about stayed in the fight.
I think this is why I was never really comfortable. We'd controlled the first half and it was inevitable they were going to get a bit of possession, they were going to get a bit of territory, and they were going to have a go back at us at some point.
Yeah.
And this was the time when it was going to happen. And it just takes a couple of lads on the pitch to realise that we're playing against some bloody good teams, as good as we are and as well as we played in that first half, we are going to have to ride the waves a little bit. And it's so easy to say in hindsight that retrospectively for that third quarter of the match between the 40th and the 60th minute, we should have just kicked it down in their half, played the territory, knocked it into their corners, kind of sucked the life out of any attack they've got, and then start to play a bit of our own game again. So easy to say that. Not always possible. And teams are much better than we can give them credit for, so they probably didn't allow us to do that. But I agree with you. You've got to stop the rot somehow. And I think we managed it well. We always stayed in touch. And that's all you can ask for in a European clash. Stay in touch.
Yeah. But Alex Lombrandt's try.
It's beautiful.
It's just that is our Onewood, isn't it?
Yes.
Get your set piece right, ball off the top, and it's Danny to Andre. Andre goes and punches holes in people. And it's a couple of passes, your best ball carries, your most skillful players, Lombrandt finding loose shoulders, and the Cretian ball just running it in from 20. It just parted perfectly for him. And Alex
stormed over the line as well. He just scored it on the dead ball line.
He just picks those gaps better than anyone else in the Premiership, certainly, as a number eight, especially. Oh, it's just so good to watch. And this big tackle from the winger came in and sort of knocked him off his feet as he's going over the line, but held on, dotted down. And you just think, if we can just find two or three more moments like that in the game, we are at times unstoppable.
My plaudits for Andre in that instance, because we've talked about Andre a little bit and how he's still finding his feet and returning to his best form. I think we saw some of the best of him.
Yeah, 100%.
And that crash ball really put us on the front foot. And if you're a big number eight like Alex Lombrandt running onto front foot ball against reversing defenders not far out from their line, there is no better ball you want to be taking. And I think Andre sets up that platform. Without that carry, I don't think we score. So he gets my plaudits there.
That is the difference, isn't it? You've got defenders that are having to, you know, turn and reverse 5 or 6 yards. So then when the pace of the ball comes, especially with someone like Alex Lombrandt, you just can't stop it. And if you do find those little weak gaps, which guys like Marcus and Danny are so good at feeding those guys through, you know, you're all the defensive weight are on the heels. The ball speed is so quick. The speed of the carry, the speed of the access over the game line from Andre is so damaging that the organisation defensively just doesn't have time to adjust to fill the gaps. And like you say, with the ball carrying Alex Lombrandt, you just don't stop it. It's just absolutely remarkable. And then,
can we talk about Lombrandt a little bit? I thought it was a proper captain's performance from him.
Yeah,
he had to do a lot of dog work. a lot of dog work. The amount of collisions he must have taken, both in attack and defence, would have been high scoring in the competitor charts.
Had one or two big turnovers as well.
Exactly.
And I just think...
he led the team well, I thought.
Especially yeah.
Gael Ficou, who's sort of trying to get in the refs here. That's when you know that he's nervous that things aren't going his way.
This was my next point. Well. And it's actually maybe something we don't often speak about. But I do think that Don Brandt seems to manage the relationship between the official really, really nicely. There are a couple of moments, and also we were lucky in some of those spells because we'd had two or three penalties on the trot while we were defending deep that didn't lead to a card. And their third try maybe even saved us from a card being given against us, because you just think we'd had, I think, three to that point.
And even at the death, when we're defending our own line and they're getting a try to win the game, the ref does even say to Alex Donbrandt, for that previous try, you gave away three penalties. You were lucky that no one went to the bin. The next one's going to go. So that part of management stuck with Donbrandt, where he had to try and coach the referee in the right way as much as the boys.
But he seems like he doesn't do it in like a... argumentative is the wrong word, because obviously, you know, players often don't argue with officials. So that's not the way you win them over. But
confrontational.
Just good conversation. And then, you know, once the conversation is at a point where you don't need to then keep going, it's just, right, go back to the boys, give them some chat, what's the next job? And that, mate, it's just, he's such a wonderful player. He's such a wonderful, just the talent and the talismanship that he's bringing to the side as a relatively young captain. I know that Steph Lavis is still the club captain, you know, whenever that may end. Alex Donbrandt is quite clearly, you know, next man up.
Growing, isn't he? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, it's remarkable. And we did say at the start of the season that, you know, having missed out on a World Cup and having, you know, some of his body composition changed and a full run into pre-season, injury fresh, you know, itching, chomping at the bit, he was going to have a special season, and it's panning out that way. It certainly is. And then the next try is just...
the try was brilliant. Danny Wilson's line out more.
Danny Wilson, and this is the thing, we keep mentioning it, it's the detail that he's bringing. We've scored a lot of tries this year coming from those set-piece driving mauls, and it's Jack Walker that pops up on the end of it. We've seen it from Sam Riley two or three times this year. Even Nathan Djibouti at hooker has, you know, notched up one or two tries in the league this year. I just think the one away at Saints. But, you know, Jack Walker at the back, having missed out last week, probably absolutely chomping at the bit to get on the pitch and get himself stuck into the game and get himself involved, get his hands on it, finds himself at the right space at the right time, just, you know, driving that more at the back, you know, steering it where he wants it. And the boys drive him over. And at that point, you think, "Cool, we're not far off here." And then, you know, the kick takes us 3 points ahead with what, 8-9 minutes to go. And you just think, "Christ, we're right in the mix now."
Yeah, and we were still firing shots at that point as well. In fact, going into the dying 3 minutes, I think.
Yeah,
it was the scrum penalty that ultimately put us in that tricky position. So the scrum goes well, then it goes bad. The line-out goes well, then it goes bad. The line-out went well for us at the right time when we got that fourth score through Jack Walker. The scrum went wrong for us at the wrong time there. And we end up putting ourselves under a whole world of pressure. But I think a lot of the lads were able to recall on last week's defensive set against Sale, because it was shades of that in the sense that you make your shot, you're straight, you're bouncing up, you're straight back up. You're in the line. You're not competing at the ruck. You're icing it. You're spreading out. You're going man for man. And we're just going to keep rushing off the line and hitting you. That was one thing that really impressed me this week, was our defensive line speed, not just from the base of the ruck, but in open play as well. The backs were always right up putting in shots. There was a few big shots from our lads. I thought Will Joseph was fantastic. One of the best games I've seen him play for Quins, if not the best game in the handful of games that he's played. He's going to be some player. How old is he? 21?
I don't know, 21, 22. But yeah, he's young and raw, and he's got some serious talent. But
he looks good.
You know, we'll very briefly finish up on the game, because we cannot do this podcast episode without highlighting some individual performances. We've done a few already, but there are some we absolutely have to talk about. They obviously kicked the corner. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 phases. Then Dino goes to the bin, and you just think, oh no, not like this. Just don't let this be what kills us right at the death where it hurts the most. And then Will Evans just with a game-winning shot. And it almost reminded me a little bit, and I know this is, again, we're we're clutching things from out in the ether. But it reminded me a little bit of the Exeter knock-on in the final where the ball bounces and then the clock's in the red, Danny kicks it out, the turnover comes, and then the boys just go absolutely ballistic. It was an unbelievable finish to the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Special.
It was special. It was really special. And let's call out some big players. We've called out Will Joseph there, but the way he ran some of his lines, the way he cut some gaps and...
Got some wheels as well, hasn't he?
He's got some serious wheels. He's got quite a low centre of gravity as well, I think. He's quite a balanced runner.
Yeah.
In the same way that actually Nick David is. Nick David made a couple of nice breaks, just sort of shimmying past Saïli, I think it was.
Yeah.
I mean, we could name every single player.
Well, so we're going to try and not do that, but then we will... But Will Joseph certainly needs mentioning. He was outstanding.
Yeah, he was. Oh, God, I can't even do the top three, actually. But Marcus Smith, man of the match, without a doubt. He was the difference.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. He's one of the best performances I've seen from him in Europe.
Two others that I want to mention. Dylan Lewis.
Yes, okay, fine. Yeah, I had him in my top.
Dylan Lewis, 80 minutes. And he there was a tackle, I think, in about the 38th minute. I think it was just as Caden was having his HIA done or was just on the deck.
He was blowing.
And he was chasing the bloke back. And I think, do you know what? Actually, no, we got this. We turned the ball over. And then Dylan makes this carry. This is about 2 or 3 minutes before half time. And I text the group. There's hundreds of messages flying into this chat. And I just remember texting it going, Dylan looked pretty cooked in that carry. He looks absolutely out on his feet. The boy needs to get to half time. So to then double down and do another 40-minute stint was absolutely outstanding. He was unbelievable.
And I know what you mean there in that last 2 minutes of the first half where there was about 3 turnovers in the space of 5 seconds. Then all of a sudden, a couple of their back three players are running down the right-hand touchline and it's Dylan Lewis making it across to make that try-saving tackle. That was awesome. So best performance I've seen from him in a Quinn shirt. And very impressive to go 80 minutes because we've often given Joe Marler plenty of plaudits for going 80 minutes. We're now blessed with Finn Baxter who made a real impact in the carry-off as well. That's something is one of his strengths, actually, Finn Baxter. He's a brilliant scrummager and he's got great hands, but to be dominant in the carry is something I think he's starting to get into a bit more as he kind of grows up a bit and fills out a bit more. And
I'll tell you, when you say mentioning 80 minutes there's a difference between going 80 in a normal game and going 80 in a game like that as a front row forward. That is absolutely berserk.
It's mental.
Someone else we need to mention very quickly, the big mutant baby, Joe Launchbury. What an impact he's making to this side.
He looks absolutely knackered.
He looks absolutely...
I worry about him. I feel he's sort of sellotape and blue tack.
But just seems to find a way to keep getting up and keep getting himself off the deck and keep making impacts in the game.
Yeah.
But what a signing.
The leader, isn't he? He's a leader on the pitch. I don't know how vocal he is in those environments. You don't see him speaking too much, but the lad said in pre-season he was very vocal and led the boys well. Probably in the absence of our World Cup players, but certainly on the field, he leads by example, doesn't he? He's at the heart of everything painful.
But he's proving to be the signing that we needed. You know, the Matt Simmons type second row.
Yeah.
That general in the second row.
Never doubt him, was it?
I don't think it was, but obviously he'd been in Japan. The WASP thing would have affected him, you know, in some way. He hasn't played the volume of high-level rugby that he did at the sort of peak of his powers, but he's some player and he's turning into that general in the second row. And he's had, you know, 2 or 3 partners in that second row this year with Ernie and with Dino Lamb, who I thought again was excellent this evening. You know, George Hammond, who's made a big impact at the start of the season, looks like he's carrying a bit of an injury, but you know, Joe got that one rest week up at Northampton and has pretty much, I think he's started every game other than that. And tonight he was special. It was really, really special. So he's getting big ticks, and I'm sure everyone will agree he's getting some massive ticks. One more we need to speak about.
Will Evans.
The clamp. Yeah. Oh, my sweet heavens. He is made of whatever, I don't know superheroes, but whatever the metal is that is, you know, completely, you can't break it, or just the strongest thing on the earth, you know, titanium, you know, with basilisk venom running through it can't be defeated. It's just unbelievable.
He puts himself through a car crash every single week. He's getting nailed in rucks. He's turning balls over. My one, not criticism of Will Evans, but the England back row is hugely competitive and this guy is comfortably good enough to be in that. I think he loses out to the likes of Ben Earl because they offer more in attack. However, I'm seeing more and more from Will Evans in recent weeks of him carrying hard and making good yardage. And
he made one of the big break in the first half, didn't he?
He did. He's looking more and more comfortable ball in hand attacking. And if he can add that string to his bow, that weapon in his arsenal, if he can become really threatening in attack, my God, he won't be far away from an England call-up. He is mustard.
But some of the collisions, who's not a big man, Will Evans. He's the smallest bloke, you know, certainly in the pack, you know, maybe minus Sam Riley. I wouldn't even hazard a guess at, you know, the weight between them, but I would suggest that Sam Riley's probably a touch heavier, as is the likes of Jack Walker. But just the impact that he makes in the tackle, at the breakdown, across the pitch, is just, it's completely berserk. He's a complete freak, isn't he? And he's so important to what we do. He's so good.
We're so lucky to have him, aren't we? And if there's one thing that I love about him more than anything, it's whenever he celebrates a turnover, whenever he celebrates a penalty, whenever he celebrates a try, or whenever he's in front of our own fans, you can see exactly what it means to him. And it is exactly what you want to see from a fan. It's the kind of thing, it's addictive, isn't it? It's like a drug. You just want more of it. If I could see Will Evans double fist pumping a penalty, a try, anything, I would pay good money for it. So hopefully we're seeing it next week on Sunday against Toulouse at the Stoop, because now we're in a position where we've got 5 points on the road in Europe in our first game. We move into a home game where a win is far more achievable, I would say, than on the road. It feels weird to say that against Toulouse.
It's just absolutely bonkers, isn't it?
But who's to say we can't go and do another job? We've just done it twice. And if there's one thing that Alex Dombrandt keeps saying, if there's one thing that Danny Wilson keeps saying, is you've got to keep backing it up. And if we can't go three in a row and back it up, back up Sale, back up Racing, if we can't do that and beat Toulouse, it's a good sense check of where we actually are. We're a bloody good side when we want to be. Let's make sure we keep showing up.
And I'm just looking at the top 14 table here, right? Racing, top of the table, played 9, won 6, lost 3. Haven't lost the game at home all season. I think they kept referencing it on commentary. Quick shout out as well. I actually really enjoyed Stuart Hogg's commentary.
Yeah.
And, you know, he sounded incredibly enthusiastic about the game, which I suppose a game like that does lend itself to. But I thought he was really good on commentary. So quick.
It was great, wasn't it?
But then we're looking at where Toulouse are on the table, right? Played 9. 1-5, lost 4. So they're 6th in the top 14. And if we look at the side that they put out against Cardiff this week, obviously it was a pretty one-sided win for Toulouse. But, you know, Cyril Bai, Richie Arnold, Thibaut Flamont, Jolonch, obviously, you know, Dupont is just, you know, he's off at the end of January. I think they referenced some commentary as well. He's off to join the Seven Circuit ahead of the Olympics. But Ramos, yeah. Blair Kinghorn's obviously gone there recently as well.
He got a couple of tries, didn't he, Kinghorn?
Yeah, there are some big names in there.
Got a try.
Ntamack is still out injured, but you know, it's a star-studded lineup that's going to be trotting out of the Stoop next weekend. And why not?
After
the 2 weeks we've just had, we've beaten. I mean, look, let's look at it right. Let's look at it objectively. I'm going to put my maths hat on, right? We've beaten the league would say the best team in England, and we've absolutely pumped them. We've then gone and beaten, on their own patch, in theory, the best team in France in one of the best games of rugby I've watched in a long time. Why not? I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a Sunday afternoon. Sunday afternoon at the Stoop.
Dupont Vicaire.
He was outstanding. Obviously, interesting seeing Ramos at 10. You know, a bit of a Marcus Smith flip to that, isn't it? Marcus is going from 10 to 15, whereas Ramos is going to go from 15 to 10 in Dupont's absence. That'd be interesting to see how he goes.
Injured, isn't he?
Yeah, still that nasty ACL.
He looks like he's back on his feet, participating in elements of training, though, into Max. So I wonder if he'll be back this week or whether he's still a little way off yet.
I reckon he's still quite a way off. That injury wasn't that long before. It was ACL as well, wasn't it? And it wasn't a long time before the World Cup. So he won't... I doubt he'll be featuring, but yeah, Dupont and Kerr is going to be absolutely unbelievable. Just Cyril Bai, France's best loose head against England's best loose head. That's going to be pretty special. I think Joe Marler again, you know, I'll tell you what I loved about Marler, right? And this is going to be interesting because it's something actually that we've spoken about. Joe's not been at his best in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Maybe even a little bit before that. And maybe part of it is that playing less minutes and maybe a little bit less responsibility on his shoulders because of the rise of Finn Baxter. He also had that amazing World Cup campaign. You know, there's been a bit of chat about, has he retired from international rugby? He's come out in the media the last couple of weeks and says, no, I'm not retired at all. I'm still kicking around. But one thing that you rarely see from Joe Marler is the emotion. See him on some of those camera angles well, after we'd scored a couple of tries and with a couple of penalties, absolutely roaring on the side of the pitch.
Try, wasn't it?
So good.
It probably means a little bit more to him, the rolling ball kind of try.
Yeah, just
probably
so good.
Probably get more energy out of him in those ones. But yeah, it's good to see, isn't it? The senior lads are still so bought in and it still means so much. And he's a Quinn through and through, one of the greatest Quins of all time. Other matchups, aside from the front row, the back row battle is going to be awesome. Got Lamont and Jelonch on their two flanks.
6 and 7 with, I mean, Chandler Cunningham South. If they're all fit and they're all healthy.
As you were, lads.
As you were, lads. Go again. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I hope they've installed an extra carriage on the Eurostar full of ice baths.
I wonder if you can get, cryotherapy chambers transported onto the Eurostar. Just pop yourself in there for 20 minutes, lads, before we jump back off. But
just one thing, Lewis in a freezer for a week.
One thing we do need to mention, obviously, it's going to be another full 6 day turnaround. Obviously, we're playing Sunday night today. It'll be Sunday at home next weekend, and then the weekend after, which is Bath away, is going to be a shorter turnaround, which is going to be on the Saturday.
Tough, isn't it?
But look, you know, just if the boys are fit. I mean, maybe the Caden one will have to keep an eye on, but Lewis has, you know, been playing well enough this year. You know, if you lose Caden, it's hugely disappointing. But
let's not forget Oscar Beard as well.
Yeah, Oscar might get the nod on the wing.
Great shots. There was one clean shot on Cameron Wockey at one point on the left hand.
Yeah, that was big.
And he's always threatening ball in hand as well. So whilst we'll miss Caden if he's not available, Oscar Beard is very, very handy and definitely going to be ready to go. And if it's not him and he's wearing 23, then Lewis Liner is also ready to start cooking again. I think he likes scoring a try or two at home at the Stoop.
Yeah,
so
it's
about time we see his name on the score sheet again.
But no, I just go, look, if you're fit, if you're healthy, and if you want to, you know, get yourselves up and going again, I'd be picking the same side.
I think you've got to back it up. Yeah. I think the season's short now with a couple of less Premiership games and all the talk is about backing up week on week. So we've got to go full strength again. I think we just keep going full strength. We rotate individuals at certain times when we have to. I don't think anybody in the current team is on a rest week next week. I don't think we can be. And then that makes Bath a little bit trickier because you've got a 6 day turnaround. They're in hot form at the moment, Bath.
Yeah, they are.
They are cooking. They look really good. Ollie Lawrence is playing out of his skin. I think that England 13 shirt is his.
Yeah. Although
Henry Slade's playing pretty well again, isn't he?
Yeah.
Will Joseph's probably in with a shot as well.
Yeah, we could do that, couldn't we?
England 13 shirt. But Bath are looking good in the league. They're looking great in Europe. That 6 day turnaround after Toulouse, how on earth do you manage that? I think we cross that bridge when we get to it. That's 100%. One for next week's podcast.
Also, when we beat Toulouse at home on Sunday, the next two games we've got in Europe is Cardiff away, which we think, you know, we don't want to jinx it and say anything we shouldn't and maybe look past the team we've still got to play. But, you know, we like to think that going there will be a reasonably good win for us. We've then got Ulster at home, who are sort of mid-table in the URC. They've played 7, won 4, lost 3. So they're, you know, not bad. But if we can beat Racing and Toulouse and then we play Ulster at home and Cardiff away, cough.
Well, Bath put a bit of a thumping on Ulster, didn't they? It was fairly tit for tat for most of the game, and then they ran away with it quite comfortably in the end. And then Cardiff's defeat, I think, was their heaviest in 17 years, or their heaviest ever European defeat. So to get that away win to start off our campaign is exactly where we want to be now. And actually, quite a lot depends on this next game. So let's see how we get on. Looking forward to other European fixtures then. Let's stay on Cardiff briefly. After 4 seasons of Two Words, Four Quarters of the Holocaust podcast, we are finally going to do a live episode, which is incredibly exciting. We are doing a live show in Cardiff in association with the Stoop Live. So Dave Rogers will be a part of it as well. It will be on Saturday, the 13th of January, in the build-up to the game. We're going to try and get a player on as well. We'll share more information in the coming days on social media about tickets and capacity, where it's going to be and things like that. But it is super, super exciting that we can actually come offline, do a physical event, bring everybody together in one room and hopefully try and recreate a bit of that La Défense Arena atmosphere in the pub before we march over to the Cardiff Arms Park and go and get a big, big win.
I've been saying, I think it's going to be the start of our stand-up career.
Stand-up?
Yeah, we'll be like the new Anton Deck. We'll be doing Saturday Night Live. I'm
You're
a celebrity.
Funny enough for that.
Well, I'm funny enough. We can use
You're not funny enough. Who's told you that?
Well, you should have got
no one.
I listen to this back every week and I'm in stitches.
Yeah. You're laughing to yourself. You've been planning that. Terrible.
But no, that's have a lot of fun. Really exciting.
We always have a good episode when we have Dave Rogers on as a guest.
Yeah,
we love getting players on as guests on our podcast. It's always our best episodes as well. So to bring all people together in a live environment with a few beers, ramping up a big European clash, hopefully off the back of two wins.
Yeah.
Oof, that could be a bit of fun, couldn't it?
Yeah. Are you going to park Dry January for that weekend?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'll definitely be drinking for that weekend, I think. And I'll probably drink enough for the entirety of January. On that weekend, especially if we're able to get three wins.
Absolutely.
Third one.
Properly exciting, isn't it?
A bit fun with that. We should do something a bit different, shouldn't we? Try and get some crowd participation games or something going on.
We'll have something going on. But no, we'll bring you more info on that as we get it and the more details we can share. As and when they come, we will. But yeah, hugely exciting. Something we're very much looking forward to do. And then very quickly,
we wrap up some three-word reviews.
Wrap up some three-word reviews, yeah.
I mean, we're doing this on a Sunday night, probably about an hour after we've just finished the game. And we have had, in 1 hour, we've had 60 three-word reviews. So we won't kill the next 10 minutes of this podcast reading all 60. But we've got some good ones. Wetford President says Beige. Super Quinn says Adrian Brown. Bring on DuPont, says Leo Adolf, also the editor of the podcast. Basically, match up, isn't it? DuPont, be care. Come on, Danny, you've got this. Evans for England, says Mike. He's not far away, is he?
Not far away.
Absolutely different class, says Johnny Boy. Wonderful, amazing Quins, says Quins Lynn. Nerves are shattered, says Callum Yorston. There's a few expletive ones that I probably won't read. Quite a lot of expletive ones.
There's one here from Hakim. Incredible Dylan Lewis. Matt says Ladefont's breached, which I absolutely love. Plenty of people replying with Ale Le Quins, which is obviously very, very apt. Well fought victory. Never say die. And I'm going to have to do some Google Translate for this. So if some of our French listeners out there can tweet us and let us know the English translation. Set le gare. I'm not quite sure what that is, but I'll do some Googling and see what it means. But I'm sure
it's brave of you to read that out without knowing. You could have been there.
Simply excellent rugby, says Tony. And Dan Pierce, this will need a beep. Fan f***ing tastic.
And the final one from me, Sam Trinder, England's number 10.
100%.
We're
England's
with you, Sam.
Number
We're
10.
With you. Right, well, let's wrap it up there for this week. Thank you for joining us after a big European away day win. For those travelling back, travel back safe. Thank you for going and representing the Quins so impeccably well. It was amazing to hear you on the TV. You were louder than anybody else in that stadium and we got serious, serious FOMO. Can't wait to be back in the Stoop this weekend, sitting alongside you all with the drum, making a lot of noise. The Stoop is going to be rocking.
No one else in the Premiership can offer that sort of away day support in Europe. We are absolutely unmatched. And why on earth would you support anyone else? I absolutely love it. What a win. See you all Sunday against Toulouse. Come on, you Quins.
Come on, Quins.